He earned his PhD from Oxford University with a master's from UTD, speaking of UTD. And his PhD is in is it languages. It's, what did you say?
It's Oriental Languages Department.
PhD in Oriental Languages from Oxford. He's the author of 12 books on various governance-related topics, and his research papers have appeared in more than 60 periodicals and in over 35 countries. He has taught at numerous universities, including Ohio State University, Franklin University, and the University of Massachusetts. He's currently on the online faculty and a mentor at Baker College. Baker College has numerous campuses throughout the state of Michigan. And had the operations as an online college as well. And that way you can stay in Dallas where it's warmer and teach via the computer. Dr. Paxley will be speaking about the rights of individuals vis-a-vis the rights of the government and how technology plays into this difficult balancing act. The title of his speech is Identity on the Way to Mars, Technology and the Contention Between the Individual and Polity Identities. And now, please join me in welcoming Dr. H.P. Paxoy.
At this point, it's customary to pull out a huge book and say, I have prepared a few notes. I would like to posit the idea of Leviathan. Before we start, Leviathan, as it is known, is a book which was published in 1682 in London. And at the time, England was not very merry. There was a great deal of contention between different points of view. Two of them were in the foremost: Protestantism as opposed to Catholicism. That is to say, Protestantism is just coming in, and Catholicism is rejecting the idea. And Leviathan is the story of how the governance ought to be. I won't delve into the details of Leviathan in order not to spoil the ending, but the point is, Leviathan, as it has entered into English language, is an all-encompassing force that governs everything without any opposition or any way of opposing the idea. Now, the thesis is, throughout history, it is possible to observe a continuous contention between the individual and the polity identities. That is to say, there is the individual, and then there is the governance. Can there be any organized life without governance? Well, some people tried it, but as soon as they tried it, very much like the Russian atheists, or the ones who rejected any type of governance, during the first meeting, they came together and tried to organize themselves. So, that being the case, we can easily posit the idea that we cannot live without any governance organization. Now, how far should the governance go in telling people who are living in that polity? Polity can be a country, can be a neighborhood. You know, we have neighborhood agreements. How far can a governance organization go telling the individuals taking up that polity? Can the governments, for example, limit the number of children in that polity? The Chinese have done it. Can the governance prohibit hunting humans? Well, almost every polity has done it. So what are the rights of the individuals against a central government? At that point, I would like to always ask the question, what makes humans think they have rights? And the best answer I've got is that because the United Nations Charter says so. But how did it get to the United Nations Charter? Before political organizations, before nation states, there was this Catholic Church who tried to tell everybody how to live and how much to give to the church and how to spend their time. And how long did it take for humans to stop and say, why should I do that? Why don't I spend my time reading different books than just Bible? Could have been 1,000 years, or longer, or shorter. And then, since that polity organization, that is the Catholic Church, was not very fond of not only being told what to do and what not to do, but obeying the dictum, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, started creating new rules during the game, so to speak. Imagine a football game, 1 yard line, the receiver is about to score, and the referee blows the whistle, stops the game, and orders the goalpost to be moved another 20 yards. Isn't that what the indulgences are? It's not in the Bible. So we come to technology. There is no way of stopping technology. Technology will develop whether we like it or not. Gunpowder, it's a technological development. When it found its way into Europe after the Crusades, because it was invented in China, it changed not only the governance method, but also the borders of the governance. Because up to that point, castle walls were able to protect a governor of some sort. But gunpowder came and leveled the walls, and there was no need for walls anymore. It just required more guns on the other side in order to stop any invader coming in with gunpowder weapons. And how does technology serve humanity? For example, an ambulance airplane can carry a person who is ill from one location to another in order to be treated in a hospital. But in the hands of some of the military rulers, for example in South America, the ambulance plane can take off with a body and came back and land in the same spot without that body. It's a technological marvel. They open the door and push the body out, and that's the end of it. So who decides how the technology is going to be used? So we're talking about the method of governance. The governance method can be very much like Cinderella. Can be found to be walking around in crystal shoes. Or it can be hobnailed boots walking all over the people. And it's not necessary for the title of a governance policy or philosophy to have the words like Fredonia, as in Texas, or Socialist People's Republic, or Republic altogether. It can be a kingdom, as in Denmark, as in Sweden, where the rights we wonder about, how did they get these human rights, just abound. Now, when we talk about governance, we're talking about a polity that is able to defend itself from internal and external competitors. The term is competitor, not enemy, because the whole idea is to have the resources at our disposal within a given polity for the purpose of having a good life, being able to enjoy good food, camaraderie, warmth in the winter, and cool, refreshing air in the summer, human comforts, and the ability to obtain those. But how is that going to be paid for? Marx said, anybody who needs something, come and get it for free. That was his biggest mistake. He never talked about the ruble price attached to it. One of my favorite cartoons shows in the Soviet Union, all manufacturing facilities were government-owned, and they were assigned an annual quota by a centrally planning organization. And a nail factory was ordered to manufacture nails weighing 300 tons. And there was a cartoon magazine. It's called Krokodil. That used to be the Soviet Union's Mad magazine. And in the Krokodil, I have seen this cartoon. Party, Soviet Communist Party Secretary General is congratulating the Director General of the nail factory for making his quota. In the background, two enormous cranes holding up a single nail. So, technology can manufacture one nail, but how many customers is that nail going to serve? Very much like the idea of customer service in the Soviet Union. If one bought a refrigerator, it came with the paperwork. It said, in case of failure, mail the item to. So, how does a polity get the money necessary to provide these comforts to the individuals who comprise the polity? Taxation. Nothing happens without taxation. We all know the drill. But then there is also the philosophy of the economy. How the people are going to afford to pay for heat in the winter and vacation time. Theoretically, in the Soviet Union, everybody had the right to go to the Yalta or the Crimea during the summer. Can you imagine 200 million people running over into 100 miles of seashore? Of course, it didn't happen. The fact that there was a right written in the Constitution that everybody could get whatever they need doesn't necessarily mean that it was done. And then, the idea of working for yourself was completely alien to the Soviet people. Most of you were told, there is propaganda and there is counter-propaganda. We were told that Soviet people didn't work for themselves because the system didn't allow it. Well, by 1924, it was so obvious to the Soviet leadership that the centrally planned economy didn't work. So they started relaxing the rules. They called it new economy. You think Chinese invented it? They copied it from 1924, Soviet Union. Hence, they do have a capitalistic economy, whereas they're keeping the political will in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, all this is already known, but how do we find the good measure, the center? How is it that we can collect just taxes and afford the humanly values we would like to have? After 30 years of study, I came to the conclusion that there is no particular magical formula. It has to do with the spirit and the desires and the excesses of humanity that determines that particular middle line. Excesses, yes, as in melting Wall Street, bubbles bursting, stocks falling, despite the fact that there are controls to stop that after the 1929 loss. But I would like to use the example of a particular television program which I happened to watch. It was, there were six individuals on stage, three technologists and three historians, with one moderator. It was 2 hours long. What it boiled down to was technologists very haughtily, and all three were household names, they were computer people, kept claiming this is where the future is. Whereas the historians kept saying, what is the future? How do we know that is the future, what you're suggesting? They were not speaking the same language. They were speaking English, but they were not communicating with each other. Over and over in different vocabularies, the computer people kept saying, this is where the future is. Everything is going to be computerized. And the historians kept saying, what is the future? How do you know what the future is going to be like? We have evidence that whoever planned for future has always missed it. You know, when you look at the old encyclopedias, the old encyclopedia under aluminum, you're going to see at the turn of the century, 20th century, you will see a white powder with no value. Or the moon. It is made out of green cheese. It's in the encyclopedia. It's the ultimate resource for learning something. I don't know if Diderot wrote that, but the encyclopedists. So without knowing, without having a common language, how are we going to reach that golden middle? How much taxes to collect and how much of it to spend on social services, and whether or not we're going to allow people to work for themselves as opposed to work for the government. For example, genetically engineered foods. Now, as we know, a lot of the European countries, for that matter, European Union, banned the purchase of genetically engineered foods, foodstuffs from the United States. And of course, a trade war ensued, whether you paid attention to it or not in the newspapers. It's a very boring subject. Trade war. So what? You're not going to buy it, and they're not going to buy it. But it's slightly more interesting than that. And it is much more crucial. Because genetically engineered foods are usually barren. They cannot replicate themselves. They were designed that way. Even those who can flower, for example, a particular variety of wheat, when it flowers, what happens when the pollen falls into another plant and pollinates it? You're going to end up with either something that is inedible, or it's going to kill the foodstuffs. So we're not talking about only outflow of treasury, the money collected through taxes, but also killing what was there, what sustained the people. And wars have started with a lot less reasoning than that, than not having food. And what about the so-called viruses that mimic different types of flu? When that particular virus is examined under the microscope, it becomes evident that this could not have happened all by itself. It's not available naturally. It was engineered. Now, why was it engineered? Well, it was engineered because there was a Cold War, and both sides of the Cold War participants were preparing for an all-out war, and that included German warfare. And now that the truce is called, the technology exists. So somebody comes up with it, uses the technology in order to come up with a different malady. And number of individuals who are household names have made enormous amounts of money out of selling the vaccination against that kind of flu. I'm sure you've seen it in the newspapers as to who those individuals are. And in closing, I would like to point out to a popular sci-fi series on TV where there is the Borg. A Borg is a composite being. I can't even call the Borg a human being, but a being. Half technology, half biological. And the Borg behaves very much like probably what Lenin or Stalin would have liked. They would obey the orders without fail and behave in an extremely standardized ways, so that they would sleep certain times during the week, and they would carry out the functions assigned to them. There would be no issues about labor, and there wouldn't be any problems with unions or expectations about finding the money to finance the operation, because they would go around robbing all the other civilizations to accumulate more technology in order to sustain their own lives. Incidentally, that's a model that has been in use since the time of the Egyptians, the empire model. An empire goes around, keeps expanding in order to sustain the life of the governance center of the empire. So Borg is where we're heading out to. All the mechanical implants and computer chip implants, you will get there someday. But are the humans going to be happy, happier than what they are today? I will leave with that question. Thank you.
We have time for a question for Dr. Petzold.
I had one about, you talked about, you say governance for many, many years. And I'd like for you to comment on the governance going on in China right now, and like what the future holds for that quote-unquote communist country.
It is no longer a matter of ideological perspectives in the case of China. It is a matter of raw materials. For China to be able to challenge, say, United States or United Europe, they need to manufacture more. And in order to manufacture more, they need to have the raw materials. So, at the moment, Chinese are investing enormous amounts of money into Africa in order to secure the oil and all the other necessary raw materials. Incidentally, that's what they were doing in 1600s, Chinese. But at some point, the emperor said, I am the celestial emperor. Everybody should come to me. I'm not going to go to them. That's when their decline started. So, to counter that, Pentagon decided to activate the Africa Command. So, it's a different asymmetric response, but the idea is the same, that is, get hold of the raw materials for the benefit of the Western world as opposed to China. So, as long as the resources are controlled, what China gets, it really doesn't matter whether they're communistic or capitalistic. That's where the crux point is.
Yes?
It makes me wonder that a country with such a huge landmass doesn't have their own resources.
The Chinese were not always a single unity. There were a number of Chinese empires adjacent to each other. And in fact, it was the Chinese who bestowed us with the notion of burning books. Approximately 3 centuries BC, one of the emperors decided that the peasantry had two duties. One, first one was to grow rice, because they needed the food. And number two, serve in the service of the emperor, either to build something or to go take it down. That was it. And there was a very thin layer of exquisitely trained professionals at the very top. Their job was to decide who to attack and where to divert the water out and how to preserve the rice crop. So there were a number of these unities. They burned all the books because they did not want the peasantry to learn anything, because that was not their job. So from that time to now, during this period, technological advances got to a point where we're talking about raw materials. At the time, They had the raw materials, human power and rice. That's all they needed. And somebody was able to think about forming an army and giving them marching orders. So over time, technology changes things. Got to where we are today.
Do they look for oil in their own land? Do they look for these resources?
They are. They have tapped all their own oil, and right now they are shopping for oil anywhere from Iran to Turkmenistan to Kazakhstan. In fact, they even built a particular oil pipeline into Kazakhstan, and they're preparing to divert another one all the way into Turkmenistan, and for that matter, all the way into Iran. So if Iran starts selling oil to China using renminbi, Chinese currency, instead of dollar, we're going to have fun. Because the value of dollar is going to go down, straight down.
Any other questions?
Yes.
On your early example of the Catholic Church, and I might add the example of the United States government starting in 1776, it seems that there is a natural tendency to escalate the power of these organizations. In other words, when the Catholic Church was founded in the first century, it needed to have the will, not the capacity, to do what it does in the Middle East. And the same way with the United States government, it was much more limited, much more bound by the side of the individual. And it seems that there needs to be a periodic readjustment, like the Reformation in that case, or various political upheavals, to do that, to counteract that thing. Do you agree with that, or do you want to make some comments on that? Thank you.
Let's start with the 1776 part. We're told that the Puritans came here in order to practice their religion more freely. That's a good summary, but there's something else underneath. The Puritans were of the, what the British euphemistically called, Geneva wine. The Protestantism, as it started developing in Europe, after Luther's nailing of the thesis in Wittenberg, went into a couple of free cities. Those were European cities, mostly in Switzerland, Basel and Geneva, started taking the flavor of what we now today know as Protestantism. And from there it went into England, first to Scotland, and we received Presbyterians from Scotland into this country. But the issue in England was not necessarily practice of religion at the time when this was happening. It had to do with a struggle between mercantilism and capitalism. See, mercantilism was an earlier system, earlier than capitalism as a system. Mercantilism required the country to export more than what it bought from overseas in order to make a profit, just like a company. But the ruling strata in a mercantilist society is the establishment. They own the land. And the people living on that land. A coachman's son could expect to become a coachman for the nobleman, but nothing else. But if the coachman, because there was a surplus of food, had three sons, well, one of them is going to be a coachman. What's going to happen to the other two? So those sons went into business, making pottery or beating the iron, making wrought iron devices. So they started making money. The Puritans basically invented the capitalistic society. In a mercantilist society, competition is not allowed because the governing strata runs the society on an age-old, generations-long style. So they had to be squeezed out. So that was the end result. I see that you were not satisfied with that particular worldview. But the idea is that the Puritans wanted to engage in trade on their own behalf, not for the landlord. That's why they had to be squeezed out, because they were becoming a very big competition. And in fact, after they left, when the Industrial Revolution got underway, a number of individuals became very wealthy, and they were wealthy by hard cash, by gold, rather than owning 1,000 acres or 2,000 acres, which put the pressure on the landed class. So those wealthy people had to be co-opted into the governance strata by way of granting them a baronetcy, for example, incorporating them into the royalty because they made money. In the case of the church's progression from one stage to the next, that's what I meant by Lord Acton's dictum. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yes, that we can see in many different cultures, and in fact, about 1,000 years before Lord Acton, an Arab, actually he's Berber, entirely different ethnicity, but from North Africa, Ibn Khaldun, wrote about that. Basically translated, it reads as, grandfather makes the money, father saves the money, grandson spends the money.
I'm rethinking my wealth.
So, yes, there is going to be, you don't even have to wait 1,000 years, as in the case of the church, for that transition to take place. And yes, it's inevitable that there has to be corrections somewhere along the line.
You want to follow up on that?
Yes, your answer was more informed than I think that was possible.
Here. Speak up.
But it was, so I'm trying to decide if that is a special case or a general answer.
I would say it's a general answer because I can come up with other examples.
Okay, other questions? Yes, okay. You see economic freedom, capitalism, political freedom, and moral freedom as correlated phenomena?
No.
Do they all have separate trajectories?
They have separate trajectories. For example, the highest moral standards. When we say moral standards, whose standard are we talking about? Is it Norway's standard or is it Mexico's standard? Because they both have high moral standards. In Mexico, you have the family, right? That's the highest level. You have to look after family members. Whereas in Norway, it is the idea of the principle that has to be defended rather than individuals, because it applies to everybody. So, because of that differential, they have to be all different. And besides, we haven't found a way to legislate morality yet. We can't even define what pornography is for legal purposes.
Which of the three would be most important in your book, between political freedom, moral freedom, and economic freedom?
without the personal freedoms, I don't think the other two can exist.
This lady has been, yes.
When you mentioned China, they are heavily invested in Sudan, and Sudan has upcoming elections. What role, if any, do you see China playing in those elections?
I don't think it matters to China as long as they get their raw materials. They can live with any elected official, especially since the system in Africa is designed to skim off the top, especially with the oil companies, as in Nigeria, for example. So I don't think they would have any objection to any authoritarian regime.
Yes, sir?
You spoke about the board. I'm not sure that everyone in the audience would have gotten that, but it's a... Actually, I don't even know how I would explain it, but it's like a tech robots that are... It's a
very, very, very close proximity to board is a beehive. One queen who runs everything, and all the bees are very specialized, and they know exactly what to do, when to do it, and how to do it.
But speaking specifically, I would say there's a wild card that might prevent us from following that trajectory. And that's the fact that never in history has there been so much information available to a random individual. You can find information on anything you want. And admittedly, most people don't have the time or information to do it, but it only takes one person to change the world if you put the right things together. You don't know what's going to come out. It really is a wild, random element to Wikipedia, Google, all that. I don't know where it's going, but
I tend to, my sentiments are with you. But imagine how the Borg works. They have built-in transmitters. They receive the order, in the case of the Borg.
Yes.
And they have no personal will to oppose it.
Right. That's, you go right to the point where I'm disagreeing. And that is that I would compare the U.S., any of the internet culture, to cats. And have you ever tried to herd a cat? I don't think even government can hurt us anymore. We're sparse. We're all in our own little interests.
What you're suggesting is the topic of another lecture, which I have right here. Let me give you one example. Ever thought of why FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Administration, was so slow in responding to Katrina in New Orleans? Did you ever wonder?
Mm-hmm.
Because FEMA's mission has been changed, and they didn't tell us. FEMA is now charged with the duty of keeping down civil disobedience. For the purpose, there are jails built in 50 states, and every one of them is within military installations. They're ready. They even designed rolling stock with built-in shackles to bring people to those jails. That's also on the internet. Everything I tell you is on the internet.
Okay.
I've seen it.
Jack?
Actually, this is a good segue into what my question is, that it seems like we're at a state in our country, the U.S., where while we allegedly still have a democratic system, that it's highly controlled by corporations, with the cooperation of a government they bought off and various elites, And we were talking about that before the meeting, about how much longer it's going to be before civil disobedience breaks out, so to speak, to retake the country, if you will. So any thoughts on that, observations? Do you think it's being anticipated?
That's why we have yet.
Oh, yes. That's why I think I've set up all these jails. The one in Texas is in Central Texas.
Where did it start?
When? I never bothered to look up the beginning date, but it must have been within 2 years prior to Katrina, the change in mission, or the actual mission change. So,
I guess it becomes a matter of scale as to whether or not the civil disobedience, the way it happened, would be effective. You know, are there enough individuals in the military, are there enough individuals in the police forces to subdue the rest of the people if enough of them decide to cooperate?
Very good point. Are you all familiar with the term posse comitatus? That is to say, American armed forces cannot be used against American civilians. Now, how many of you have read the Patriot Act? Do we know every particular written in the Patriot Act? They didn't even give us the whole book, what the Patriot Act contains. Well, I can assure you, you can always look it up on the internet, Posse Comitatus Act, even though it looks as if it's intact, it has been perforated. In fact, there are army units specifically designed to put down civil disobedience right now. And they're stationed along the Canadian border at the moment. No, there are not enough police.
But you know, it seems like that if corporations that have products to sell are based on consumption, that it's almost becoming, they're like defeating themselves in a sense, because the average consumer is standard of living is going down, and therefore their ability to consume is getting to be less. And it's interesting that especially in fast food restaurants, I would say that you're looking at there where prices are starting to come down, because for the first time in many, many years, consumption has gone down.
Well, that's one thing we have not been told as to how they're going to deal with it from the corporation side. But let me give you the market. Imagine a corporation that controls an entire continent. How does it control it? It has army, it has navy, it has schools, it has tax collectors, it collects the taxes, and then takes all those collected taxes, takes it to another country, and distributes it as income on the investment, because there are shareholders. You think this is a intellectual experiment? No. It was known as the British East India Company in India. They collected taxes and then they took it to London and distributed this income. Then it had navy and army and all that. Now, in the 1960s, there have been two suggestions. Number one, for multinational corporations, as they were known at the time, to duplicate exactly that. And the counter proposal was to make the multinational corporations members of the United Nations. Neither one came to pass. Why? Because there was not enough propaganda in the media in order to cause that take place. So, when you look at the news, take a look at Fox News evening, and then get on the internet.
It's a 94.
Yes, and then type news, and look at the world news as it appears on the internet, as opposed to Fox News, or for that matter, any news on TV. Why is there that big of a discrepancy?
Well, since corporations weren't allowed to become members of the UN, I think they don't want to be. I think what's happened is the government has become a proxy for the corporation.
Exactly. For example, why was there a need for 179 questions in the census 10 years ago? It had nothing whatsoever to do with apportioning representatives. All the information was sucked up by the corporations because they had statistical validity in terms of selling toilet paper.
Whatever.
You know, why does the government need to know how many toilets I have in the house?
Okay, other questions? Yes, right here.
Given the degree to which we're a consumerist society and the African American is glued to the television and follows the winds of this industrial military complex, what would catalyze it with this media tomorrow? What would bring it about?
Either people becoming sick and not being able to receive a cure, or not having enough food to eat. You know, the basic comforts of life, as we were talking about, finding the middle way.
The first thing is not more likely than the second, given the health care.
Well, you can toss the coin between two. Mm-hmm. I can't.
You've been studying governance for 25, 30 years. If you look at all the countries in the world, which country has got it right, has figured out that balance between the rights of citizens and the rights of the government? Which country do you see as a model?
Unfortunately, it's a rolling target. It can be one country one year and another country other year. Because anytime you try to measure something, you run into the Heisenberg difficulty. You know, the effect, trying to measure something is going to make a difference.
What about 2010?
Can I go to Mars?
You mentioned Norway. I thought that you might mention, maybe you bring up Norway. Okay, question back here.
That's what I thought, too.
Yes.
Your example of the details that are meant to control people and another thing you mentioned is that if these things were well known, that there's plenty of people who like to make sensational statements and like to bring up controversial issues that would love to expose this. And I'm talking about some radio talk shows. And I don't seem to hear much of this.
How many television owners are there in the country?
Well, I have my radio,
but most of the radios are owned by the same companies that own the television stations. And the numbers of owners are decreasing by the day. And the power is going into the hands of three or four different corporations. If it is to the advantage of those corporations not to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, then what happens?
Well, you're saying there's most all of these people one way or another. I mean, you're fine.
Well, the
bringing up the subject and reading the stuff.
Because the corporations who control these stations are entirely beholden to FCC for their licenses to broadcast. So it's very easy to control them.
Part of this didn't come out, though. Because I heard about this 10 years ago on talk radio.
Yes.
And it just died. And they just was going to talk to people about it. I don't believe that.
Yes. Well, it's still on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have time for one more question. Yes.
Is there any doubt in your mind that free market capitalism is the way to go? That if you compare East Germany to West Germany or communism, I mean, don't we have enough historical data to make that claim? And certainly men need liberty, freedom, and that established here in the United States really on the scale that it was for the first time ever. How can you, aren't the facts in?
Let me start out by encapsulating economics altogether. If you wish to make $1 million in your lifetime, become a merchant. If you wish to make $1 billion, that's 90s, go into politics. If you wish to make more than $1 billion, you have to start a war. Now, when you apply that to economics altogether, does that sound like there's entirely free enterprise? We're talking about manipulation. Even in the case of West Berlin, for example, the height of the Cold War, the liveliness of West Berlin economy as opposed to just across the wall on the east side on the Brandenburg Gate, it was not because of capitalism. It was because money was injected into West Berlin in order to pull the ears of the Soviets. That aside, I wish there was that freedom to make money. That is, I would like to see a free economy, but it has never been free.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you, Dr. Jackson.